Slave didn't find Jace, but we did, and Sebastian right along with him. And now we know what they're planning, and we have... He glanced at the clock on the wall. Barely any time to stop them. Are you going to help or not? The black phone rang again. Again, Maris didn't even move to answer it. She was looking at Alec, her face white with shock.
You did what?
We know where Jace is, Mom, said Isabel. Or at least where he's going to be, and what he's going to do. We know Sebastian's plan, and he has to be stopped. Oh, and we know how we can kill Sebastian, but not Jace. Stop. Mary shook her head. Alexander, explain. Concisely and without hysteria, thank you. Alec launched into the story, leaving out, Isabel thought, all the good parts, which was how he managed to summarize things so neatly. As abbreviated as his rendition was, both Aline and Helen were gaping by the end of it. Maris stood very still, her features immobile. When Alec was done, she said in a hushed voice,
Why have you done these things?
Alec looked taken aback. For Jace, Isabel said. To get him back.
You realize that by putting me in this position, you have given me no choice but to notify the Clave, said Maris,
her hand resting on the black phone.
I wish you hadn't come here.
Isabel's mouth went dry.
Are you seriously mad at us for finally telling you what's going on?
If I notify the Clave, they will send all reinforcements. Gia will have no choice but to give them instructions to kill Jace on sight.
Do you have any idea how many Shadowhunters Valentine's son has following him?
Alec shook his head. Maybe 40, it sounds like. Say we brought twice as many as that. We could be fairly confident of defeating his forces. But what kind of chance would Jace have? There's almost no certainty he'd make it through alive. They'll kill him just to be sure.
Then we can't tell them, said Isabel. We'll go ourselves. We'll do this without the Clave.
But Maris, looking at her, was shaking her head. The law says we have to tell them.
I don't care about the law, Isabel began angrily. She caught sight of Aline looking at her and slammed her mouth shut.
Don't worry, Aline said. I'm not going to say anything to my mother. I owe you guys. Especially you, Isabel. She tightened her jaw, and Isabel remembered the darkness under a bridge in Idris and her whip tearing into a demon, its claws locked on Aline.
And besides, Sebastian killed my cousin, the real Sebastian Verlac. I have my own reasons to hate him, you know.
Regardless, said Maris, if we do not tell them, we will be breaking the law. We could be sanctioned, or worse.
Worse? Said Alec. What are we talking about here? Exile?
I don't know, Alexander, said his mother.
It would be up to Gia Penhallow and whoever wins the Inquisitor's position to decide our punishment.
Maybe it'll be Dad, muttered Izzy. Maybe he'll go easy on us.
If we fail to notify them of the situation, Isabel, there's no chance your father will make Inquisitor.
None, said Maris. Isabel took a deep breath.
Could we get our marks stripped? She said.
Could we lose the Institute?
Isabel, said Maris, we could lose everything.
Clary blinked, her eyes adjusting to the darkness. She stood on a rocky plain, whipped by wind, with nothing to break the force of the gale. Patches of grass grew up between slabs of gray rock. In the far distance, bleak, scree-covered karst hills rose, black and iron against the night sky. There were lights up ahead. Clary recognized the bobbing white glare of witchlight as the door of the apartment swung shut behind them. There was the sound of a dull explosion. Clary whirled around to see that the door had vanished. There was a charred patch of dirt and grass, still smoldering where it had been.
Sebastian was staring at it in absolute astonishment.
What?
She laughed. A dark glee rose in her at the look on his face. She had never seen him shocked like this, his pretenses gone, his expression naked and horrified. He swung the crossbow back up, inches from her chest. If he fired it at this distance, the bolt would tear through her heart, killing her instantly.
What have you done?
Clary gazed at him with dark triumph. That rune? The one you thought was an unfinished opening rune? It wasn't. It just wasn't anything you've ever seen before. It was a rune I created.
A rune for what?
She remembered putting the stele to the wall, the shape of the rune she'd invented on the night when Jace had come to her at Luke's house. Destroying the apartment the second someone opened the door. The apartment's gone. You can't use it again. No one can.
Gone?
The crossbow shook. Sebastian's lips were twitching, his eyes wild.
You bitch! You little...
Kill me, she said. Go ahead, and explain it to Jace afterward. I dare you. He looked at her, his chest heaving up and down, his fingers trembling on the trigger. Slowly, he slid his hand away from it. His eyes were small and furious. There are worse things than dying, he said, and I will do them all to you, little sister, once you've drunk from the cup, and you will like it. She spat at him. He jabbed her hard, agonizingly, in the chest with the tip of the bow. Turn around, he snarled, and she did, dizzy with a mixture of terror and triumph, as he prodded her down a rocky slope. She was wearing thin slippers, and she felt every pebble and crack in the rocks. As they neared the witchlight, Clary saw the scene laid out before them. In front of her, the ground rose to a low hill. Atop the hill, facing north, was a massive ancient stone tomb. It reminded her slightly of Stonehenge. There were two narrow standing stones that held up a flat capstone, making the whole assemblage resemble a doorway. In front of the tomb, a flat, still stone, like the floor of a stage, stretched across the shale and grass. Grouped before the flat stone was a half-circle of about 40 Nephilim, robed in red, carrying witch-light torches. Within their half-circle, against the dark ground, blazed a blue-white pentagram. Atop the flat stone stood Jace. He wore scarlet gear like Sebastian. They had never looked so alike. Clary could see the brightness of his hair even from a distance. He was pacing the edge of the flat still stone, and as they grew closer, Clary, driven ahead by Sebastian, could hear what he was saying. Gratitude for your loyalty, even over these last difficult years, and grateful for your belief in our father, and now his sons and his daughter. A murmur ran around the square. Sebastian shoved Clary forward, and they moved through the shadows, and then climbed up onto the stone behind Jace. Jace saw them and inclined his head before turning back to the crowd. He was smiling. You are the ones who will be saved, he said. 1,000 years ago, the angel gave us his blood to make us special, to make us warriors. But it was not enough. 1,000 years have passed, and still we hide in the shadows. We protect mundanes we do not love from forces of which they remain ignorant, and an ancient, ossified law prevents us from revealing ourselves as their saviors. We die in our hundreds, unthanked, unmourned by our own kind, and without recourse to the angel who created us. He moved closer to the edge of the rock platform. The shadow hunters before it were standing in a half circle. His hair looked like pale fire. Yes, I dare say it. The angel who created us will not aid us, and we are alone. more alone even than the mundanes, for as one of their great scientists once said, they are like children playing with pebbles on the seashore, while all around them the great ocean of truth lies undiscovered. But we know the truth. We are the saviors of this earth, and we should be ruling it.
Chase was a good speaker, Clary thought with a sort of pain at her heart, in the same way that Valentine had been. She and Sebastian were behind him now, facing the plane and the crowd on it. She could feel the stares of the gathered shadow hunters on both of them.
Yes, ruling it, he smiled, a lovely, easy smile, full of charm, edged with darkness. Raziel is cruel and indifferent to our sufferings. It is time to turn from him, turn to Lilith, Great Mother, who will give us power without punishment, leadership without the law. Our birthright is power. It is time to claim it.
He looked sideways with a smile as Sebastian moved forward.
And now, I'll let you hear the rest of it from Jonathan, whose dream this is, said Jace smoothly.
And he retreated, letting Sebastian slide easily into his place. He took another step back, and now he was beside Clary, his hand reaching down to twine with hers.
Good speech, she muttered.
Sebastian was speaking. She ignored him, focusing on Jace. Very convincing.
You think? I was going to start off friends, Romans, evildoers, but I didn't think they'd see the humor.
You think they're evildoers? He shrugged. The Clave would. He looked away from Sebastian, down at her.
You look beautiful, he said, but his voice was oddly flat.
What happened? She was caught off guard.
What do you mean?
He opened his jacket. Underneath, he was wearing a white shirt. It was stained at the side and the sleeve with red. She noticed he was careful to turn away from the crowd as he showed her the blood.
I feel what he feels, he said. Or did you forget?
I had to Irazi myself without anyone noticing. It felt like someone was slicing my skin with a razor blade.
Clary met his gaze. There was no point in lying, was there?
There was no going back, literally or figuratively. Sebastian and I had a fight. His eyes searched her face.
Well, he said, letting his jacket fall closed, I hope you've worked it out, whatever it was.
Chase, she began. But he had given his attention to Sebastian now. His profile was cold and clear in the moonlight, like a silhouette cut out of dark paper. In front of them, Sebastian, who had set down his crossbow, raised his arms.
Are you with me? He cried.
A murmur ran around the square, and Clary tensed. One of the group of Nephilim, an older man, threw his hood back and scowled.
Your father made us many promises. None were fulfilled. Why should we trust you?
Because I will bring you the fulfillment of my promises now, tonight, Sebastian said. And from his tunic, he drew the imitation mortal cup. It glowed softly white under the moon. The murmuring was louder now. Under its cover, Jay said,
I hope this goes smoothly. I feel like I didn't sleep last night at all.
He was facing the crowd and the pentagram, a look of keen interest on his face. His face was delicately angular in the witchlight. She could see the scar on his cheek, the hollows at his temples, the lovely shape of his mouth.
I won't remember this, he had said. When I'm back, like I was, under his control, I won't remember being myself.
And it was true. He had forgotten every detail. Somehow, though she had known it, had seen him forget, the pain of the reality was acute. Sebastian stepped down off the rock and moved toward the pentagram. At the edge of it, he began to chant.
Abyssum invoco, Lilith, invoco! Mater, mea, invoco! He drew a thin dagger from his belt, tucking the cup into the curve of his arm. He used the edge of the blade to slice into his palm. Blood welled, black in the moonlight. He slid the knife back into his belt and held his bleeding hand over the cup, still chanting in Latin. It was now or never. "Jace," Clary whispered, "I know this isn't really you. I know there's a part of you that can't be all right with this. Try to remember who you are. Jace Lightwood." His head whipped around, and he looked at her in astonishment. "What are you talking about?" "Please try to remember. Jace, I love you. You love me." "I do love you, Clary," he said, an edge to his voice. "But you said you understood. This is it. The culmination of everything we've worked toward." Sebastian flung the contents of the cup into the center of the pentagram. "Hic est inum calix sanguinis me." "Not we," Clary whispered. "I'm not part of this. Neither are you." Jace inhaled sharply. For a moment, Clary thought it was because of what she'd said, that maybe, somehow, she was breaking through his shell. But she followed his gaze and saw that a spinning ball of fire had appeared in the center of the pentagram. It was about the size of a baseball, but as she gazed, it grew, elongating and shaping itself until at last it was the outline of a woman made all of flames. "Lilith," Sebastian said in a ringing voice, "as you called me forth, now I call you. As you gave me life, so I give life to you." Slowly the flames darkened. She stood before them all now, Lilith, half again the height of an ordinary human, stripped naked with her black hair waterfalling down her back to her ankles. Her body was as gray as ash, fissured with black lines like volcanic lava. She turned her eyes to Sebastian, and they were writhing black snakes. "My child," she breathed. Sebastian seemed to glow, like witchlight himself, pale skin, pale hair, and his clothes looked black in the moonlight. "Mother, I have called you up as you wished of me. Tonight, you will not just be my mother, but mother to a new race." He indicated the waiting shadow hunters, who were motionless, probably with shock. It was one thing to know a greater demon was going to be called, another to see one in the flesh. "The cup," he said, and held it out to her, its pale white rim stained with his blood. Lilith chuckled. It sounded like massive stones grinding against one another. She took the cup, and as casually as one might pick an insect off a leaf, tore a gash in her ashy gray wrist with her teeth. Very slowly, sludgy black blood trickled forth, spattering into the cup, which seemed to change, darkening under her touch, its clear translucence turning to mud. "As the mortal cup has been to the shadow hunters, both a talisman and a means of transformation, so shall this infernal cup be to you," she said in her charred, wind-blown voice. She knelt, holding the cup to Sebastian. "Take of my blood and drink." Sebastian took the cup from her hands. It had turned black now, a shimmering black like hematite. "As your army grows, so shall my strength," Lilith hissed. "So I will be strong enough to truly return, and we shall share the fire of power, my son." Sebastian inclined his head. "We proclaim you death, my mother, and profess your resurrection." Lilith laughed, raising her arms. Fire licked up her body, and she launched herself into the air, exploding into a dozen spinning particles of light that faded like the embers of a dying fire. When they were gone completely, Sebastian kicked at the pentagram, breaking its continuity, and raised his head. There was an awful smile on his face. "Cartwright," he said, "bring forth the first." The crowd parted, and a robed man pushed forward, a stumbling woman at his side. A chain bound her to his arm, and long, tangled hair hid her face from view. Clary tensed all over.
"Chase, what is this? What's going on?"
"Nothing," he said, looking ahead absently. "No one's going to get hurt. Just changed. Watch." Cartwright, whose name Clary dimly remembered from her time in Idris, put his hand on his captive's head and forced her to her knees. Then he bent and took hold of her hair, jerking her head up. She looked up at Sebastian, blinking in terror and defiance, her face clearly outlined by the moon. Clary sucked in her breath. "Amatus." Chapter 21. Raising Hell. Luke's sister looked up, her blue eyes, so much like Luke's, fastening on Clary. She seemed dizzied, shocked, her expression a little unfocused, as if she'd been drugged. She tried to start to her feet, but Cartwright shoved her back down. Sebastian started toward them, the cup in his hand. Clary scrambled forward, but Jace caught her by the arm, pulling her back. She kicked at him, but he'd already swung her up into his arms, his hand over her mouth. Sebastian was speaking to Amadeus in a low, hypnotic voice. She shook her head violently, but Cartwright caught her by her long hair and jerked her head back. Clary heard her cry out, a thin sound over the wind. Clary thought of the night she'd stayed up watching Jace's chest rise and fall, thinking how she could end all this with a single knife blow. But all this hadn't had a face, a voice, a plan. Now that it wore Luke's sister's face, now that Clary knew the plan, it was too late. Sebastian had one hand fisted in the back of Amadeus's hair, the cup jammed against her mouth, as he forced the contents down her throat. She retched and coughed, black fluid dripping down her chin. Sebastian yanked the cup back, but it had done its work. Amadeus made an awful hacking sound, her body jerking upright. Her eyes bulged, turning as dark as Sebastian's. She slapped her hands over her face, a wail escaping her, and Clary saw in astonishment the voyance rune was fading from her hand, fading to pallor, and then it was gone. Amatus dropped her hands. Her expression had smoothed, and her eyes were blue again. They fastened on Sebastian. "Release her," Clary's brother said to Cartwright, his gaze on Amatus. "Let her come to me." Cartwright snapped the chain binding him to Amatus and stepped back, a curious mixture of apprehension and fascination on his face. Amatus remained still a moment, her hands lolling at her sides. Then she stood and walked over to Sebastian. She knelt before him, her hair brushing the dirt. "Master," she said, "how may I serve you?" "Rise," Sebastian said, and Amadeus rose from the ground gracefully. She seemed to have a new way of moving all of a sudden. All shadow hunters were adroit, but she moved now with a silent grace that Clary found oddly chilling. She stood straight in front of Sebastian. For the first time, Clary saw that what she had taken for a long white dress was a nightgown, as if she had been wakened and spirited out of bed. What a nightmare, to wake here, among these hooded figures, in this bitter, abandoned place. "Come here to me," Sebastian beckoned, and Amadeus stepped toward him. She was a head shorter than him, at least, and she craned her head up as he whispered to her. A cold smile split her face. Sebastian raised his hand. "Would you like to fight Cartwright?" Cartwright dropped the chain he had been holding, his hand going to his weapons belt through the gap in his cloak. He was a young man with fairish hair and a wide, square-jawed face.
But I... Surely some demonstration of her power is in order, said Sebastian.
Come, Cartwright, she is a woman, and older than you are.
Are you afraid?
Cartwright looked bewildered, but he drew a long dagger from his belt.
Jonathan.
Sebastian's eyes flashed.
Fight him, Amatus.
Her lips curved.
I would be delighted to, she said, and sprang.
Her speed was astonishing. She leapt into the air and swung her foot forward, knocking the dagger from his grip. Clary watched in astonishment as she darted up his body, driving her knees into his stomach. He staggered back, and she slammed her head into his, spinning around his body to jerk him hard by the back of his robes, yanking him to the ground. He landed at her feet with a sickening crack and groaned in pain.
And that's for dragging me out of my bed in the middle of the night, Amatus said, and wiped the back of her hand across her lip, which was bleeding slightly.
A faint murmur of strained laughter went around the crowd.
And there you see it, said Sebastian. Even a shadow hunter of no particular skill or strength,
your pardon, Amatus, can become stronger, swifter than their seraphically allied counterparts. He slammed one fist into the opposite palm.
Power. Real power. Who is ready for it?
There was a moment of hesitation, and then Cartwright stumbled to his feet, one hand curved protectively over his stomach.
I am, he said, shooting a venomous look at Amatus, who only smiled.
Sebastian held out the infernal cup.
Then come forward.
Cartwright moved towards Sebastian, and as he did, the other shadow hunters broke formation, surging toward the place where Sebastian stood, forming a ragged line.
Amatus stood serenely to the side, her hands folded.
Clary stared at her, willing the older woman to look at her.
It was Luke's sister.
If things had gone as planned, she would have been Clary's step-aunt now.
Amatus.
Clary thought of her small canal house in Idris, the way she had been so kind, the way she had loved Jace's father so much.
Please look at me, she thought. Please show me you're still yourself.
As if Amatus had heard her silent prayer, she raised her head and looked directly at Clary, and smiled. Not a kind smile, or a reassuring smile. Her smile was dark and cold, and quietly amused. It was the smile of someone who would watch you drown, Clary thought, and not lift a finger to help. It was not Amatus's smile. It was not Amatus at all. Amatus was gone.
Jace had taken his hand from her mouth, but she felt no desire to scream.
No one here would help her. And the person standing with his arms around her, prisoning her with his body, wasn't Jace. The way that clothes retained the shape of their owner, even if they had not been worn in years, or a pillow that kept the outline of the head of the person who had once slept there, even if they were long dead. That was all he was. An empty shell she had filled with her wishes and love and dreams. And in doing so, she had done the real Jace a terrible wrong. In her quest to save him, she had almost forgotten who she was saving. And she remembered what he had said to her during those few moments when he had been himself.
I hate the thought of him being with you.
Him, that other me. Jace had known they were two different people, that himself with the soul scraped out wasn't himself at all. He had tried to turn himself over to the Clave, and she hadn't let him. She hadn't listened to what he'd wanted. She had made the choice for him, in a moment of flight and panic, but she had made it, not realizing that her Jace would rather die than be like this, and that she'd been not so much saving his life as damning him to an existence he would despise. She sagged against him, and Jace, taking her sudden shift as